20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packer fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here today. I'm being joined by the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com. You can find him on social media at JUMOSQ. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. It is great to be talking with you, Justice. How the heck are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. We got a little bit of sunlight today in the Pacific Northwest. So
nice.
Can't complain. First time in probably like 6 weeks. So
we got snow again here in the Green Bay area. So yeah, that's not exactly fun. We got rid of it, and then we had like 3 inches of snow that came back, and then we got rid of it, and then we just had 3 inches of snow that came back again. So yeah, hopefully we get rid of it for good this time and don't have anything come back. But of course, you know, that NFL draft in Green Bay is pending, so you never quite know what's going to happen in Green Bay that time of year. So could get a little bit interesting, to say the least. It's been an interesting week since we've talked last. Not a ton has gone on. Probably the biggest thing has been the Mecole Hardman signing. I guess just sort of your overarching thoughts on Mecole Hardman being a Packer and where that kind of brings Green Bay's receiving room.
Yeah, so Front Street, I talked to his agent. Because I was kind of trying to figure out, like, okay, what's up with this? And, you know, nothing too interesting. I mean, he was like, you know, it gives him a returnability, and with Christian Watson starting on the IR and stuff, maybe it gives him an opportunity to see the field as a kind of a field stretcher on the offensive side. Because if, I mean, the dude ran like a 4.2 coming out of college. Yeah. I don't know what he runs now. But I mean, that field stretching ability was at least there at one point, right? Like, I think his rookie year, he averaged like 20 yards per reception or something like that. So I think that's planned with him. I don't know if they're going to try him as a kick returner or if he's going to be more of a punt returner than anything. You know, Jaden Reed has kind of been the primary punt returner the past couple of years. He's not been good at it. You can look at like PFF's grading and stuff like that. I think they gave him like a 20 over the past two seasons.
That's not bad.
They could certainly get better at that spot. So I like it from that standpoint. I think from a, like, if you're thinking about like a 53 man roster, he's probably pushing Bo Melton more than anyone else on this roster at this point. Cause you know, Malik Heath kind of brings you a different kind of element, right? He's going to be more of like the dirty work guy. He's going to be able to help you on special teams in a way that wide receivers usually don't for Bisaccia. So I do think that, you know, kind of a little bit of added pressure on Bo Melton, and it covers your butt a little bit, right? Where, hey, all right, well, at least we have two small, fast guys that we can try out at the beginning of camp, and, you know, doesn't tie your hands in the draft potentially. Cause I know everyone says like address everything through the draft. And this has been an issue that we've been running with, like, we've been running kind of choose your own adventure mock drafts in, at APC the past couple weeks. First one was, so Derek Harmon went first, a D tackle out of Oregon. Second round, it was Benjamin Morris in the corner out of Notre Dame, who was overcoming, I believe it's labrum surgery in his hip. It was season-ending surgery for him. And then third was Savion Williams, the wide receiver out of TCU that we've talked about a couple times. People get mad that there's not more picks in the first three rounds. It's like, yeah, dude, we have three. I don't know how to break this to you, but we didn't trade away any stars like Aaron Rodgers or Davante Adams to gain more picks recently. So that's what we got. You know, I think people think of it really as like four big holes, right? With wide receiver, defensive end, defensive tackle. And then depending on where you stand at the cornerback position. So people get mad that four holes are not addressed with three picks. And it's just like,
it's going to be tough.
What's going to happen, man?
Yeah, this is definitely not one of those drafts where obviously they have an abundance of picks, at least as Goody would say, as of yet. I could see easily a world where they move, if they can move from pick 23 to like 31, 32, and maybe pick up a third round pick. Yeah. And then you've got four top 100. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
I think if you're going to trade out, you got to do it in the first, because I don't think you want to trade out from the second round.
No, I don't think so either.
The talent starts to drop pretty significantly.
I saw somebody float this out there, and maybe it was, I don't think it was you, but I saw somebody float this out there, and I think it's actually smart, and it's sort of a bummer all rolled into one, that Minnesota has the pick, one pick behind Green Bay, and they're going to be desperate for probably trading down and getting additional draft picks, because they would have four draft picks, I think, in total.
Oh, so yeah. They have nothing.
Yeah, they have nothing, right? So they could theoretically undercut the Packers pretty significantly. Now, the good news is that Green Bay has the better pick at pick 23 and not at pick 24. So that's a very positive thing that they're a pick ahead, but another team might be able to get it cheaper from Minnesota than maybe what they would from Green Bay in that same scenario.
Yeah. And I think that's one reason why, like, I think the visits matter. So right now there's only been four confirmed visits that the Packers are going to have out of the 30 that they're allotted. The only two significant ones are both Shamar Stewart and James Pierce Jr., who are both pass rushers. So if you're a team wanting to trade into the Minnesota pick for a pass rusher, you probably want to jump Green Bay or trade with Green Bay. You can't wait for the Minnesota pick, because if you're trading up, it's probably because you have one guy who's a tier above everyone else, right?
True.
Or at least at a position of need. So you would think that, you know, having Green Bay there would make you very, very uneasy about, you know, actually being able to turn that card in for the player.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point as well. And yeah, hopefully just a defensive end that maybe Green Bay likes, or defensive tackle that Green Bay really likes is there for them to take at 23, and it's much ado about nothing, and they don't even want to trade down because they've got the perfect pit sitting in their lap. And if that's the case, I will be all for that as well. But just interesting to see how that could maybe play out. But to your point, only three picks in the first three rounds. Not that those are always guaranteed to be great either. And not that other picks couldn't be, right? We saw Evan Williams make a pretty significant impact in the fourth round a season ago. And other times you get Jamon Moore in the fourth round, and other times you get Josiah DeGuara in the third round, and we can go on and on. So you never quite know, but they could definitely use the picks, and they got three to work with, and hopefully they can somehow find a way to nail all three of them.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to talk, we're going to get to a variety of different topics today, but kind of switching to the opposite side of the ball. Another thing that's happened is Green Bay has started to bleed corners just a little bit. Not anything that I think anyone's necessarily losing any sleep over, but Eric Stokes is now gone. You've got Corey Ballantyne, who is now gone. You have got Robert Rochelle, who is now gone, and Jaire Alexander, who's probably out the door. So again, it's not like anything massively concerning at this point, but talking about one of those potential needs, they are losing some depth and potentially some competition. So it would lead me to believe that whether it's early, late, or somewhere in the middle, that they could spend a draft pick or two at corner as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of the positions that we talked about before, like even the like re-signing process started, right? Like we were like offensive line, linebacker, and corner are probably just like where you need bodies. Now, the bodies that you're losing, I don't think are super significant. Ballantyne is probably the one that I like the most, honestly. Stokes, if you guys haven't figured this out yet, after a year of me and Andy talking about him, I don't know what Stokes brings to the table. I thought Ballantyne even played better than him as an outside corner. So you're talking about outside corner options: Jaire, Nixon, Ballantyne, probably Hobbs. So for guys who have been under contract one of the last 2 years, he probably would have been my sixth outside corner option. I don't think we're losing much there, especially considering that he doesn't contribute on special teams either. Rochelle is basically just a special teams player, which has some value, but I don't doubt that Bisaccia is going to be able to find a guy who's going to be able to play special teams for him. So I'm not super worried about that. Ballantyne was good depth. He did not get exposed when he was put on the field. He played a bunch of special teams. I don't know what the contract details were out there for the Colts deal. But I assume it's probably in a $2 million range, which I really like. I wouldn't have hated bringing him back on that kind of money, but
it is out there. Do you want to know what it is?
Sure. Give it to me.
It is pretty minimal. It's a 1-year, $1.2 million deal, but does have a $167,500 signing bonus, and $315,000 of his base salary is guaranteed. So it's basically half of his salary is guaranteed, but it's pretty much a minimum contract. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, good for him for going and getting that. I'm sure, you know, that's helpful, especially like, who knows if Ballantyne would have made this team depending on what happens in the draft. I mean, that's why a guy goes and gets the guaranteed money, right? Instead of re-signing with Green Bay. But yeah, Ballantyne, I think, would have helped. The way I look at it right now, I mean, we're going to get 1,000 comments on this YouTube video saying like, why don't you just bring Jair back? I just don't think it's happening. If it does, I'm cool with it. I was the guy who throughout last season, when everyone was doom and gloom, I was like, why can't we just restructure, which is apparently off the table because Jair won't take it. The Packers won't offer it because he won't take it, all that stuff. But I was pretty optimistic about Jair coming back until, you know, locker clean out day. And that's kind of when things turned, at least from a perception standpoint for me. So right now, I just kind of assume we have three corners, right? And it's Nixon, it's Hobbs, it's Ballantyne. You're going to play Bullard in the slot. If Bullard goes down, one of those guys is going to end up playing in the slot, probably one of Nixon or Hobbs. And then you got a backfill, and they have some internal options, right? Like King, right, that you drafted. There was the guy that they picked up.
Kamal Haddon
from the Chiefs. They got him onto the practice squad from the Chiefs. He was drafted in like the sixth round last year.
Yep.
He's more of a nickel more than anything, and he was brought up for some special team stuff. You know, they have two guys that they got on reserve futures deals. I think both of them might have been at Oregon State at one point.
And they I did played not look at that.
Katano Ladapo. And, you know, we had the former co-DC at Oregon State on our roster as a defensive quality control coach. I'm talking about the Packers. And so, you know, maybe there's some ties in there where they're hoping to get them on the field quickly because, you know, they kind of know the system a little bit. And, you know, we saw how fast Katano Ladapo was able to kind of make an impact on the field despite not getting a ton of reps. So maybe it's one of those guys. But yeah, I mean, certainly no guaranteed roster spots after the first three cornerbacks. And that's probably a position where, the way that it's structured right now in a 4-3 defense, you're going to spend more bodies at linebacker. Bisacci is going to want bodies at tight end and safety. You're probably going to want to carry five corners. Maybe they get up to six, but most likely I would probably say five. So you have two roster spots that are centrally open on this team that's returning like 50 players from its 53-man roster and free agency signings. So, yeah, I mean, if you're talking about just like warm bodies, where do we need it? Cornerback is definitely one of the positions where you can just, you know, throw the day three picks at.
Especially, you know, potentially Kamal Haddon and Kalen King going back in the practice squad is a real possibility as well. So you can stash a couple of those guys there as like your number six and number seven and probably not have to worry about it too much. So I think there is some real possibility there to add a couple players to the back end of the roster, but only have to keep maybe five instead of six if you can pull that off. By the way, they did both play at Oregon State at one point. You are correct on that. So nice pull there. You mentioned the contract for Ballantyne. I wanted to go back just for a second. When you talked to the agent for Mecole Hardman, was there any indication of, is this a, hey, he's going to have to make the team deal? Or is this a, hey, he's on the team deal already? Like, do we know guarantees, anything like that?
No, I didn't talk details. This was day of. Let me pull it up.
Yeah, I know the contract's not out there yet. I was just curious if you gleaned anything from your conversation as to whether or not.
No, I mean, I would assume it's a, I mean, this late into the process and stuff like that, I would assume it's, you know, 1 year deal, you know, very like, probably similar to the Ballantyne deal in terms of guarantees, if there are guarantees in it. I think he's coming in here to be a punt returner, to be totally honest. And, you know, if he gives you something on offense, great. But I think his primary job is going to be a punt returner.
I think we talked about this a little bit, but do you have any appetite for a blocking tight end in Green Bay at all?
I thought that's what John Fitzpatrick was going to be, but I don't know what's going on there because they didn't pick up the tender, right, on the RFA contract. Basically what that is, right, is like if the Pack – so John Fitzpatrick is not an unrestricted free agent. because he hasn't played 4 years in the NFL yet, right? Yep. So he plays the 3 years. He's a restricted free agent. They can tender him. Well, the right of first refusal is like $3 million. And the Packers, understandably, did not want to pay, you know, their tight end $3 million. So they were like, nope, go to unrestricted free agency. Since then, I have no idea what's happening. I don't know why he isn't back on the team on like a minimum deal. They've done this before with Tyler Davis, you know, a guy who not so much blocking tight end, but was like a guy who helped him on special teams. Fitzpatrick actually out-earned Ben Sims' snaps towards the end of the season, both on special teams and the offensive side of the ball. Fitzpatrick played at Georgia, mind you. This is when they had Darnell Washington. This is when they had Brock Bowers. He was not getting a lot of passes thrown to him, understandably. No. But he did have a very high like run blocking rate or run blocking score when you look at like PFF and stuff like that for tight ends. I thought that was the role that he was going to be. So do I have an appetite for it? Yeah, for sure. That blocking tight end at this point with Musgrave as tight end too, and you know, Kraft, you probably don't want to be playing on special teams. That blocking tight end probably has to play on special teams at this point.
Yeah.
So that's the only qualifier I'll say. I don't know what's happening with Fitzpatrick. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if recording this on Monday night, I wouldn't be shocked if on Tuesday he was signed on like a
one-year
minimum deal type thing.
The only reason I'd be surprised is because I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. Like, it seemed like such a simple thing. Just
weird. Yeah. Well, like, when Tyler Davis, when they turned down the tender, he was like one of the first guys to re-sign in free agency like 2 years ago. Like, it was like, you know, clock strikes midnight, and he's like the first signing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if it's that. I don't know if it's the front office being like, hey, actually, we really like Ben Sims, and we would like for him to get more opportunities. So if we just take Fitzpatrick away from the coaching staff, they can't play Fitzpatrick over Sims. But they brought both of them in on pre-draft visits. So they've had their eyes on both of those tight ends for a while. So I don't know why. I can't envision a John Fitzpatrick market developing down the stretch, Andy. I don't know if it's because like the draft is coming up and he's, you know, in a position where, you know, he would be competing with a lot of these day three draft picks and stuff like that. And maybe he wants to choose his spot post draft. But yeah, I don't really understand what's happening with that situation.
That piece would make the most sense. If the Packers are saying, we'll bring you back on a vet minimum 1 year deal, no guarantees, and he can't get anything out of it now, then I could see his agent being like, wait till the draft is over and see where all the pieces fall and then find the spot that works best based off of who has the least depth. And if Green Bay doesn't draft the tight end, all right, then you go back to Green Bay and you've got a great opportunity. All of a sudden Green Bay drafts a guy in the fourth and the sixth round at tight end, it's probably a different story. So I guess see some world in which maybe waiting for him does make some sense.
Yes. It's just guys want to sign contracts.
True story. We'll see what happens. But I do have some appetite for a blocking tight end. Again, it doesn't have to be anything like, you know, world changing or anything like that. But to your point, they probably need to be able to play some teams. And I do think it has a role in Matt LaFleur's offense, though. And Musgrave's not that guy. Kraft is a nice overall tight end, but they don't really have that piece on the offense. And if they could find it in some way, I would definitely be for it in some capacity. Let's talk about our main topic for today. You touched base on him earlier in a pre-draft visit. And I know there's some hesitation and anxiety and trepidation about the potential for the Packers to draft one Shamar Stewart. And if you look at some of the raw athleticism, this is a very Packers-y type Packers draft player. Athleticism is through the roof. If you look at the production, people immediately bring up 4.5 sacks in his career and bring that to the table, which also seems like a very Packers-y defensive end of like all this potential, but maybe not the production. So I had the opportunity to go through and watch his tape today. I know you recently did a scouting report on him as well. So let me ask the question, Justice, should the Packers be wary of drafting Shamar Stewart? And more importantly, should fans be concerned that Shamar Stewart could be the pick?
No. He's a great football player. I don't know where I stand on him versus Abdul Carter, to be totally honest. But after probably Mason Graham and Travis Hunter come off of the board. He would probably be up there in terms of just best player available. Don't care about the position. Now, when is that going to be? I mean, that might be after like sixth overall. I think that's where the Jaguars are picking. I think they probably like Mason Graham based off of how their GMs talked about it in open settings, which is kind of a wild decision about his defensive line room. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's in that conversation, man. Athleticism wise, we're talking about one of the most talented players just from a physical standpoint that we've seen. And that was after, I don't think he played at 290, but they listed him at 290 at A&M. He showed up at the combine at 267, legitimately doing Myles Garrett type of things. That defense was run first. That defense is wonky. You only have to, it's funny we're having these conversations, right? Because the timing of it was just interesting to me. One, we're talking about this coming off of Edgerrin Cooper, who last year everyone was like, I don't know if he knows how to play linebacker in the NFL, because he was essentially a quarterback spy for a lot of his snaps in the SEC, because that's just what they're seeing, right? What they're worried about is just the option game, either, or I guess option quarterback scramble game, right? That's just what it is. It's a lot of RPOs. It's a lot of screens, a lot of true option, true quarterback runs. I looked at the stats, and like one of the teams on the schedule, Tennessee, right? They barely cracked 100 true dropbacks. So that's not including screens, RPOs, scrambles, quick game where the edge rusher is not supposed to be a threat, right? If I'm taking three steps back and my job is to throw a slant, that defensive end is never supposed to be a threat to me, right? It's basically a play off as long as the offensive lineman can get to his landmark. So there's not a lot of true edge rushing opportunities, even at the top of college football anymore.
Yep.
I think that's why you're seeing guys like Abdul Carter is coming from a linebacker background. You know, people are even talking about like Jihad Campbell from Alabama, who played linebacker for Alabama last year, potentially being an edge rusher. I'm spacing on the other Jalen Walker from Georgia. Yep, he's a Georgia guy who's a linebacker edge hybrid. And people are like, can he do it at, you know, 240 pounds? There are guys who are playing on the interior, like Mykel Williams. You're not going to get a lot of like true edge rushers who are doing NFL things at the college. That's just done. They don't want to structure their defenses like that. So there's a lot of times where, you know, Shamar is playing like a four eye technique, or he's playing defensive end and he's in a six, which is outside the shoulder of a tackle, but there's a tight end attached. And instead of playing stack linebackers and having him play wider, they play him tight and they'll, you know, add another linebacker there. So he's still having to take on a double team, even though it's a tackle and a tight end and stuff. So why would you have that guy pin his ears back and go after the pass rusher? The other thing too is A&M had another guy, Nick Skirton, who was talked about as a potential top 10 pick coming into this past year. He was a transfer out of Purdue. Everyone loved him. He had like five sacks this year too. So it's not like another guy was eaten. And you can't find that many first round mocks with him mocked in there, because that's just not how the defense is structured. Skirton probably put on bad weight. I don't know a nicer way to say that. His film definitely was better in 2023 than it was in 2024. But like, yeah, man, that whole defense is built to stop RPOs. Because what college football is built to do right now, it's not let's stop progression passes like it is in the NFL. It's we have to stop the run and then also a route. It's not a route combination. It's literally a route, right? It could be a nine. It could be a stop. It could be an out. It could be a glance. But we're trying to fit the run and then cover a route. And that's what our job is in college football right now. So I think Shamar Stewart is really interesting as a prospect, because I think it tells us a lot about where we're at in college football. I think in the same way that like NFL teams know, like you have to completely rebuild a quarterback prospect or an offensive line prospect, because what they're doing has very little to do with what you're going to be doing in, you know, NFL schematically, I think we're at that point with pass rushers too. And that's new reality. Like, if you're the NFL and you have no hands on your developmental pipeline until these guys are 21, 22, 23, 24, even 25 with, you know, all these 6-year seniors and stuff like that, this is what you're going to get sometimes, man. This is what happens when there's no minor league for these guys until they're 3 years removed from high school, at least. So that's kind of my spiel. I think he has a lot more bend than people give him credit for. Totally. I don't think there's many options or opportunities for him to really kind of show that off. The Arkansas game, he shows it off a good bit. I think he had like Robert Quinn type of edge bending potential, which is pretty rare for a guy that size. That's why I bring up Robert Quinn, because he was specifically really good at it. You can look at his run stop grades and stuff like that. I think they gave him like an 88 grade for PFF in terms of his ability to stop the run. And he 100% got better every single year. There's plenty of plays where his get off, which is his best trait by far, he's literally beating blocks in the backfield, about to touch the running back when the running back is getting the ball. Right. I need you to understand that. Like,
there's one where he blew up a handoff, or it was maybe more of like a read option type of thing, but he literally blew up the handoff, caused a fumble on it as well. There's multiple of those on tape, which is crazy.
Yeah. There's some goal line stuff where, he's just getting off the ball and he's in the backfield. He's a really special player. I would not be shocked if he was a guy who goes top 10. He was a guy I think I brought up with you, and I was talking about like Trayvon Walker type of rise. I still wouldn't be shocked if that happened. I was going to say, like, that's a pretty good comparison, I think, if we're just talking about like just vaguely like what type of prospects they were and what kind of like career trajectory they have. Trayvon Walker, I get sent these stats all the time where people are, putting up these, it's just dot charts, right? It's just spray charts where, it's got Derek Barnett as the best pass rusher ever and Trayvon Walker is the worst pass rusher ever, but it's got, Shamar Stewart closer to Trayvon Walker. And I'm like, well, Trayvon Walker is the comparison, so I don't understand why you can't see that. That's a guy who went first overall, had a horrible pass rush rate in college football because of wonky scheme stuff. He was playing 4-eye. He's playing on the inside shoulder of the tackle, and he was having to deal with double teams constantly because they play that dumb mint tight front. And guess what? Last 2 years, he's had back-to-back double-digit sacks. That doesn't happen by accident. If you're not learning from these test cases, I don't understand what's going on. And like, I get people being concerned about the LVN stuff, because I think that's where a lot of it's coming from with Packers fans, is the LVN stuff, which, like, fine. I think our defensive line coach sucked. Like, I don't think Revivich was good at his job. When Mike Smith was here, we took flyers on Rashawn Gary. They'd do the Rashawn Gary pick every single year if they could. If they could promise to get a Rashawn Gary, they'd turn in the first-round pick for Rashawn Gary every single time. We also got this guy, Za'Darius Smith, who was a situational pass rusher with the Ravens. We paid him a ton of money. Guess what? He was like DPOY candidate level good. So I don't understand this thing where it's like, no, the player has to be a finished product, all this stuff. Dude, if we're in that market, especially for college football players, there's not much of a market to be said of. I'm sorry. Like, yeah, coaches have to earn their pay. And I think Revivich was really bad. I think Revivich cost us a lot of prime years in terms of, what we get from cap suppression on like rookie cap hits and stuff like that with guys like, Lucas Van Ness. I mean, look, Rashawn Gary figured out how to stop the run in a year under Jeff Hafley. Yeah. I don't know how long, our run game coordinator was our defensive line coach, and he gets fired and things start to get better. Huh? Interesting how that works, right? Like, I just think we had really bad coaches on the edge and on the interior defensive line since Mike Smith left.
I miss Mike Smith.
I do too.
Yeah. I don't hopefully, think what's your thoughts on DeMarcus Covington, right? DeMarcus Covington.
I don't know much about him. To be totally honest, I mean, he definitely got guys in good spots. The Patriots got that guy who's playing on the interior and outside. I'm spacing on his name. The kid from Georgia Tech.
You're going to kill me.
I think we brought him in for a visit. Keon. Yeah, Keon White. So, I mean, he knows how to play guys in the right spots. I mean, I don't think they had a lot of talent last year, especially on the edge. They had the weird situation with the kid from Alabama, too, where he ended up having blood clots and stuff like that. He was supposed to be their number one defensive tackle. Keon White really had to step up. So, I don't know if I can honestly tell you a lot about, you know, our new defensive line coach, but I do think it's probably better than Revrovich, who, by the way, is moving down to assistant D-line coach, which is like the assistant to the D-line coach, not the D-line coach.
Right.
For the third time in his NFL career. Not a hot commodity.
Not a great hire. So hopefully that can unlock a bunch of things, but I don't usually say this. I don't like getting into these, like, they're not going to be there. I will be pretty stunned if Shamar Stewart is there at 23. And if he is there at 23, you think he will be? You think there's a good chance he is?
I don't know, man. They brought him on a visit, and I don't know if that, they're thinking potential trade up or what, but yeah, man, I would, I'd be pretty excited with a Shamar Stewart. I'm not going to lie. Like, I have him top two. I just have it like tiered off because I don't really have to do draft rankings. So like, I don't care about them, but it's him and Abdul Carter for sure. Like, no doubt in my mind, those are the top two guys. And then probably Mike Green out of Marshall after that. And then like, I like some of the other guys more than like James Pierce doesn't do it for me. I'll tell you that on Front Street too. I think he's just a run and chase guy. So I end up liking like guys like Princely, who I know didn't have a great combine. I like Swinson, the kid out of LSU. I think he's like one of the better, probably all around defensive ends in this class. So yeah, I've seen a lot of these edge rushers. I understand what the market is. If you guys don't know my background, right, it's the position I've played, you know, growing up. I didn't play college or anything like that. I have consulted with NFL teams about the position, specifically about like how kind of like film matches combine production matches NFL production type of stuff. Stewart, I would take, like, I don't know what, like, I don't think that there's any character issues or anything like that, but if he's clearing character and clearing, you know, medicals and stuff like that, that's a top 10 pick. That's a top 10 pick.
I'm totally with you. So we're not talking to Ja'Kai Polite here where there's some combine and off field issues. That's still to this day one of the more crazy draft just stories of like everyone's crushed to like, oh, maybe stay away, and then just completely flailing out of the league in like what, like a year or two. That was a train wreck and a half. No, this is just some of the stuff I wrote down as I was watching him today. Obviously, you can see the elite athleticism on tape. You don't need to see the testing numbers. You can see it immediately.
He's chasing down screens. He's chasing down running backs from behind on stretch play. He would be our best, and this is stupid, but it's a trait. When you're running zone, the guy on the backside of the line, especially like stretch, is unblocked.
Yep.
He would be our best chase player on this roster at defensive end by far. He's way better at it than Gary is. He's way better at than LVN is. I know we talk about those guys as really good athletes. This guy's a different tier of it. Like, they're really good linear athletes, right? Like, they can get a lot of power. If they're running in a straight line, they could get their hands on you and put a lot of power in those situations. This guy can, like, move side to side and all those things, and he's flying off of the ball, which is by far the most important trait from these guys.
Yeah, he is pure raw power, unbelievable athleticism, does a nice job getting under pads, could use maybe a little bit of a wider move set. Who couldn't? He can win with a long arm, which at least he's got something working for him there. He also has a spin move at his disposal, can win with speed, power, and converting speed to power, can line up all over the place. You've seen him line up standing over players. You've seen him line up at defensive tackle, like you said, all over the defensive line, left side, right side. Doesn't seem to matter. He doesn't have one specific side that he goes to. Absolutely relentless. Unbelievable jump off the ball, like you mentioned, holds the edge well. I do think there is something to, like, and I think he even said it, I think Bukowski pointed this out, at least online today. I haven't seen it myself, but that he can finish some of these plays a little bit better and just kind of convert some of these into sacks. But like, it wasn't anything egregious that I looked at that I was like, oh my goodness, he's just falling off of sacks left and right. It's not, to your point, this to me was more happenstance and is just guys getting rid of the football, and like nothing that he could have done differently, nothing that Von Miller or Khalil Mack or anyone else could have done differently. Just guys getting rid of the football right before he gets to the quarterback. I loved him. I loved him pretty much from the word go. As soon as I turned on the tape, it doesn't take too much and you fall in love with him very fast. And I had no other real like negative notes on anything. That this, a couple of the screenplays that you mentioned, him reversing fields, and like there's one play where it's a bootleg play and he comes across like he's going to go for like the run play and then makes the change to the quarterback and then quickly realizes there's going to be a player like a little like screen to the other side or a little like underneath to the other side, changes direction from the run play to the quarterback to this other to the receiver. The quarterback throws the ball and he meets the receiver at the ball in like a millisecond and it's just game over. He's so freaking fun to watch.
There are some things that he has to work on, right? Which is why with the production, he's not going to go as high as, well, maybe he does go that high. I don't know. I don't see the future, but he plays high, which is not surprising considering he's like 6'5".
Yeah.
It's not always too high, but there's a lot of times when he's put in really bad situations as an interior guy. Again, he's not going to be doing this at the NFL level at 267 pounds or whatever he was listed at. But he can't be handling double teams when he's playing as high as he is. High. So you got to drop your pad level or your core strength has to get a lot stronger if you're going to be doing that, right? Those are the two solves there. And then, like you mentioned, his pass rush toolbox isn't great right limited. Now. But guess what, dude? If the feet are there, I can teach the hands. That is the last thing that, like, in terms of importance, your feet are deciding damn near everything. And it's not like he's not a physical guy or anything like that. It's just I don't think that A&M staff honestly knows what it's doing on the defensive line. So, yeah, they want to do goofy things like play two potential first-round edge rushers, like, out of position, doing all this goofy run-first stuff. Play Edgerrin Cooper as a quarterback spy instead of a true linebacker like the Packers are doing. Keep doing it. Spook other teams because the Packers aren't really worried about that. They only really care about how you fit into their system. They don't really care about how you got there.
Yeah. Not like you said, not perfect things that he can work on, but all of the, and I almost hesitate to say this because people I feel like in Green Bay are starting to hate the word like traits and starting to hate the word like, you know, prospect and starting to hit like
guys. Learned from Ted Thompson, who learned from Ron Wolf, who learned from Miles Davis. Get used to it.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it to you, man. Like, I mean, they're going to break their mold every once in a while. Their mold breakers are worse than anything.
Yes.
Their mold breakers are Amari Rodgers and Jason, you know, Denver. Josh Myers. And yeah. So I'm sorry we had a bad defensive line coach. And that potentially derailed what we could have had in LVN. Can't let that paint your entire future.
I don't think you can possibly know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you it anyway. Do you think there is any feel of this within the organization? And that's why they maybe didn't spend more on the defensive line, is because they feel like they have the pieces. And now with a new defensive line coach, it's going to unlock those pieces even more.
Well, I mean, all three of them have said it, right? LaFleur said it, Halfley said it, Goode said it, where they're like, no, we like the guys that we have on our defensive line. Yeah. It's like, okay, then you got to fire the coach. And then they fired the coach, but, you know, now we got to see what it looks like the following year. The thing that sucks is, okay, Wyatt figures it out this year. Contract season. LVN, two of his four rookie contract years are already in the past. So the timing sucks. It's not good to have a bad defensive line coach ever. You can't really afford to have that.
Where in the power rankings of positional coaches, how would you power rank the positional coaches from most important to least important?
O-line coach, DB coach,
it's a good one.
Quarterback coach, and then probably defensive line after that. Linebacker.
What's least important? We'll skip to that.
Probably tight end. Tight end is the one in college that they're like, all right, you're also the special teams coordinator. So I'll probably say tight end. I mean, you're only in charge of like three dudes, right? And sure, half the time when you're doing online stuff, when you're doing blocking stuff, you're going to want them with the offensive line. And when you're doing passing game stuff, you're going to want them with the receivers. So I would say probably tight end coach has the least on his plate for sure.
All right, I have a few fun ones before we get you out of here. I got asked this question, and I think it's a fun question, and I didn't have a great way of answering it. So I had the opportunity to go through and finally watch the Nate Hobbs film, and somebody asked me, who is better, Keyshawn Nixon or Nate Hobbs? And I'm curious to what your answer would be after going through and watching Hobbs, of which one, just in general, with like, I don't know, you could go as like, who would you rather have on the team? Who would you rather have in a game winning situation? Who would you rather have on the roster this year? Whatever you want to take it. Who's better, Keyshawn Nixon or Nate Hobbs?
So I think Keyshawn's a better corner. Hobbs is more athletic and he has more ball skills. Keyshawn, I'm just assuming like if it's a PBU, it's because it hit him in the back of the head. Right. And he just never turned around. I love Keyshawn. He just doesn't really have ball skills like that. I think Keyshawn, as of now, I think he's been way more consistent as an outside corner for sure. Which is why I continue to bring up, like, I think those just might be the starting cornerback pairing because you're not going to have Hobbs on the bench. So people don't like that, but, I guess we'll see what happens day one, day two of the draft next month.
Yeah, I think it is too. I said they're basic. I thought they're in the same kind of tier of corner. And I think I said you could kind of go
agree with way. That.
Yeah,
I just
kind of go either way with it.
I think Hobbs can be better.
Yeah,
like Hobbs has the upside to be the better corner, especially if he's, you know, finally transitioning to outside corner. I just think Keyshawn, like going into the year, I think he's the more consistent of the two, at least at the outside spot. I mean, they got Keyshawn. Yeah. I mean, that's just kind of how I feel about the situation. I also don't know that much how much the corner one, corner two debate.
Oh, it doesn't.
Because they're not going to move.
It doesn't either. It was just more of like a fun question. This was my answer that I messaged back. I think Hobbs is probably better, but I think they are kind of in the same tier of corner, good, solid players who fit the scheme, who aren't going to be playmakers or shutdown guys, but you can win with. Given a one-on-one situation, I'd probably take Hobbs, but it could probably go either way. I am intrigued with Hobbs' upside, and hopefully Green Bay can unlock it a bit more. He does have a lot of talent, but definitely similarly tiered players was kind of my official answer to it. So that's how I went with it. All right. My next random question, and I have a very strong answer to this, but I'm curious your thoughts. There's the thought process out there that if you're not going to re-sign Rashid Walker next year to a contract, that Green Bay should be considering trading him right now and getting as much draft capital as you possibly can get because he's just going to be somewhere else in 2026 anyway. Should Green Bay consider a Rashid Walker trade if they could get a solid return on him?
I don't know how confident they are in Morgan. So, I mean, I think you want an answer on Morgan before you make that decision. You can kind of play it out. The other thing too, man, like how big is the tag difference at this point? If Dan Moore Jr. is getting 20 something million dollars per year, that's what Rashid is going to get. You could probably, they're probably going to be able to be in a spot where you could at least clear it for that day one tag next year and then have him as an asset, trade him away. Sort of like the Devontae kind of blueprint, I guess. So I just don't think that they're going to do it. So I haven't really put my headspace into that situation. They just might pay it too, man.
Yep. Here's where I'm at. I don't think there's any way that I agree with you in the first part. I don't think there's any way they will. I also agree. I don't think there's any way that they should. I just don't think you can find good offensive linemen. I think it's so incredibly difficult. You trade away Rashid, and maybe they get somebody in the first three rounds in that situation if they trade him away, but you don't know what you're going to get there. You don't know what you really have in Morgan yet. You're introducing Aaron Banks to a new team. You're an injury away from having a potential real issue along the offensive line. There's not really great depth left in free agency. Some of the guys that were left have recently gone that you could maybe fill in gaps here or there. You could sign a Will Hernandez. He's coming off, an ACL injury, if I remember correctly. It was a major injury. If it wasn't an ACL, it was something similar. And I don't know that I would have any level of comfort. And I think you could feel like, hey, maybe Morgan and Banks, Jenkins, Ryan, and Zach Tom can be a good enough starting offensive line. I just would feel very uncomfortable with anything that would be behind him at that point and still wouldn't know what you're going to get in Jordan Morgan at left tackle. And I like Rashid at left tackle. And while I would not extend him right now, I would let him go into the season on that last year of his deal. I also wouldn't put it past him to have a good season this year and actually Green Bay want to extend him or give him that new contract because he's just a good player. So I am totally against it and would definitely keep him on the roster.
The way you got to think about it, right? So Jordan Morgan's playing left tackle. He gets injured. Yeah. Are we moving Elgin Jenkins to left tackle? Is Travis Glover playing left tackle? Like that's how thin the margins are with the depth on the offensive line right now. So I think they're looking more to add bodies than get rid of bodies at that position.
What's that?
I was just going to say, like, this is just cost of business on the offensive line, man. Like, starting left tackles are going to get $20 million a year. Like, it costs more than a quarterback to keep an offensive line together. That's just what it is.
Did you see the Facebook post about the Packers getting a 6'7" monster?
No.
This is the Facebook post. Breaking. Packers secure 6'7" monster for Jordan Love. And then it's like the snorting smoke emoji face. The Green Bay Packers just made a towering addition, reportedly locking in a 6'7" tight end to give Jordan Love a major red zone weapon. With Love entering a crucial season, this massive target could be a game changer in Matt LaFleur's offense. Big body, big upside, big help for QB1. Hashtag Packers, hashtag Jordan Love, hashtag NFL breaking news. Read more in the comments below. That was about Kadeem Telfort, by the way.
Tight end?
Yes. I don't know where they got tight end from, but this was...
He signed his RFA tender? I didn't even write that up, bud.
His exclusive rights free agent tender he signed. So
does he sign it? Yeah. Everyone signs it. They don't have another option.
I know. Of course they don't. Well, didn't Ryan Grant, though, fight that to some extent and be like, I'm not coming to camp? I think it was Ryan Grant who fought the exclusive rights free agent tender. But I digress. That was from some Green Bay Packers fans Facebook page, and it was just a beautifully done six. So Green Bay has their 6'7" monster at tight end, Justice. You just didn't know about it. That is Kadeem Telfort, by the way.
Definitely blocking tight end.
Yes. All right. Last but not least, we got some Packers numbers. We already knew that Nate Hobbs is going to be number 21. We've got number 67 for Banks. So sorry, 65 for Banks. My apologies. 65 for Aaron Banks. Then we've got Sean Clifford going to number 16. We've got Mecole Hardman taking number 6. And most importantly, we've got James Esther going from number 65, who is now Aaron Banks, to number 98 along the defensive line. So this is obviously a very important conversation. So your thoughts on these new numbers for these players?
Biggest come up was for Esther. The 60s is so nasty for a defensive lineman.
Number 98, it's big time now. He goes to a legitimate practice squad and maybe elevation player now by number 98. I didn't feel good about it.
Full locker too. Probably doesn't have to share it with anyone anymore. Sean Clifford changing your number third time in 3 years.
Not great.
Probably not keeping a third quarterback this year is what I'm reading. But yeah, man, what a panic pick that was, the Clifford situation. If you don't remember, the Packers were really cash strapped and there was a quarterback run right before that. They end up taking Clifford, who I honestly don't know if he would have been drafted anywhere else. you know, he was a guy who was like ranked in like the 600s in terms of like the consensus draft board and stuff. And the Packers kind of had to have a quarterback, so they panic picked him. Goofy.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Honestly, if I were Clifford, are you even going to get better opportunities elsewhere? I guess is the question, but
I think it probably depends if Green Bay or what Green Bay does to add a fourth quarterback to the roster. If it is a undrafted free agent, then Clifford is probably in about the best position he can possibly be in.
But okay, here's the thing. If they were willing to trade for Malik, they're not giving Sean Clifford that backup job.
No, he can't earn that. He can't. I mean, his best position or his best odds are practice squad emergency number three quarterback. Like there's no going up from there, I don't think, nor probably should there be. Yeah, didn't Evan Williams pick him off three times in a practice last year? He got picked off four times. I think Evan Williams had three of them.
I forgot about the wow. I forgot about the Clifford interception.
Streak. Oh, he went on a spree. Oh, he went on a spree.
he had like 15 one week. I forgot about that.
It was just handing out candy at Halloween. Just you want a ball, you want a ball. Like it was Oprah Fest. It was glorious to watch. There were a lot of defensive backs who really started making some names for themselves that week. I think that might have been the start where Love was holding out too. If I remember, I don't know. Maybe it was different times.
So.
But
yeah, I think so.
And yeah, also Sean Clifford did some major work for Jordan Love in that time frame. Just reminding them, like Jordan Love should probably give a decent size of that, a little chunk of that contract at least to Sean Clifford to just remind everyone of like, hey, remember you could just pay me right now, and this is what you're going to get otherwise. And yeah, it was as ugly as could be. But
right, that's all I got. Must for you. Like it in Green Bay, because yeah, I mean he got that extended look, all that stuff. Why are you coming back, dude? You should have signed I don't know what his other reserve future. Well, I guess he ended the season on the 53, right? So he doesn't really have a reserve future situation.
No, but his time where he could have done it would have been once he got released last year, and then he decided to come back to Green Bay's practice squad. But he had the opportunity there because you figured for those first like 4 weeks of the season, he was going to potentially be the backup because Willis theoretically hadn't known the offense yet. Little did we know that, you know, in week two, he was going to be the starter or whatnot. But you can at least understand why he made that decision in the moment of like, I'm still probably the backup for a few weeks. He didn't become that, but I could see the thinking there at least.
Clifford's agent should tell him to sign with another practice squad after cutdowns next year.
Yeah, because he's not going to make the 53 here. And yeah, I think you're probably right. Just similarly, probably what I guess we don't know if Pratt like was even welcome back. That was such a weird situation in Green Bay.
Yeah. But
similarly to his agent being like, no, we're out of here, or Green Bay. I don't know. I don't know if it was Green Bay saying we're out of here, but I always remember like when LaFleur and others were asked about Pratt of like, how's he doing? How's he progressing? And it was Steno, I think, had the like the most hilarious like pause being like, you didn't really do it, but it was like, how the F am I going to answer this question in a positive light? Like there were multiple times where it was like, it's got a long way to go. And it was that was all there was basically to it. They tried to find as many positive ways they could spin it, but they clearly did not like Michael Pratt, something Pratt.
Isn't that an actor?
Spencer Pratt? Is it singer, actor, something?
Something.
Yeah, I'm not good with Pratts, but Spencer Pratt is a American TV personality. In 27, he began dating Heidi Montag. That's Spencer Pratt.
Is that
Pratt.
The Hills? Is he Eskimo Brothers with Jay Cutler? Is that what I'm hearing?
Michael Pratt's the quarterback. That's the thing that we need to know here. So doesn't matter anymore. This is the really good stuff. When you get to 53 minutes of Justice and I, that's when the hard takes really start coming.
That's March 24th.
Yes, exactly. That is the ultimate March 24th. We've been recording for 53-minute conversation. Justice, I'm going to get you out of here. I appreciate you a ton. What do you got cooking up on Acme Packing Company this week?
Man, we got those mock draft rounds running right now. I would like for you guys to go vote, not a quarterback. I think they just want me to write up a quarterback as the Packers' first-round pick to troll me right now. They're voting Jackson Dart. How am I going to do this, Andy? If they actually vote Jackson Dart. So let's not do that.
Why was he an option?
I see, this is the mistake I made. So last time I was like, here are the guys at the Packers positions of need, right? People complained. They're like, we want to look at other things. Like, let's draft maybe an offensive lineman in the first round, stuff like that. So I just listed all the guys who are still available in like top 40 for the consensus rankings when the Packers went up for the clock in this draft simulation. And I'm getting hammered by Jackson Dart right now. So less than great situation. Please can come contribute into the comment section at APC. We're going to get scouting reports on a lot of these guys. Again, Packers have at least four visits set up or have already passed. I've watched two of them. It's Pierce and Shamar Stewart. I'm going to get Pierce up. I'll probably have that up on Tuesday or Wednesday. And then I'm going to dive into two of the lesser known offensive linemen that they brought in, because I have 0.0 exposure on either of those guys. That'll be fun.
Awesome. Well, looking forward to that. We'll definitely be checking that out over at acmepackingcompany.com. Make sure to follow him at JUMOSQ on social media. And of course, check out Acme Packing Company for all your daily Packers needs. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. And of course, the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Justice and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.